Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Do-it-yourself projects, more of us staying at home, traveling less. Go to Lowe's.com. I built a little bar cart. Even I could build it. My wife's way better at that stuff than me. It was even I could do it. Got a little tray with a C on it. I am the king of my domain with that giant cart. I used it this weekend. Check out Lowe's.com. Very interested to hear from David Shaw. He's my friend. He's the coach at Stanford. The Pac-12 and the Big Ten said, you know, we're out. We're not going to do this. What are the routines? Does it hurt in recruiting? What do we know? What do we not know? And he's going to join me now via the Carroll Global Satellite Network. So let's start with this. I've said before, my daughter's a college student. She's not an athlete. And I've said, I almost wish she roomed with athletes because I know they'd be getting tested 3 times a week, and she's not. So I kind of feel like college athletes, if my kid was at Stanford and I know you would be getting them tested and they would be your medical supervision, I'd feel pretty good. What I would worry about is my daughter hanging out with her non-athlete roommates and boyfriends and who knows what. So my takeaway on this may be simplistic, but it's, I think the athletes are safer than the student body. Am I wrong on that? What do we know? How do you feel?
First of all, good to see you, Colin. And absolutely, I agree 100%, like most coaches and student athletes agree also, is that we provide an environment that is a lot safer than the general population of a university. Our conference concerns have a lot to do with the actual playing of the sport and a lot of the things that we've heard recently, where it's not the day-to-day keeping them away from the virus. We all know it's proven around the world that you can't completely stop this thing, can't completely keep it out. This new information about the heart, and Colin, you've talked to doctors before, and when you have world-renowned cardiologists that say, you know what, I don't have an answer for you. I think that forced a lot of us to kind of pause and say, okay, there's a big element here that is a potential health risk that we don't have an answer for, that we better operate with caution. And then on top of that, I agree that we have a rhythm of testing, of taking care of them, that I think is really great. But then you're talking about competition, you're talking about getting on the field, and especially the last couple of studies that come out to say those neck gaiters that most people are wearing may or may not be effective at all. The shields may or may not be effective at all. And most guys don't want to wear the shields now because of the heat that they feel under those helmets. That now it's not just transmission of the virus, but then also the high-risk contacts, where if one person is test positive, and then now if those masks, those gaiters, and those shields don't work, then that just made 4 other guys, 8 other guys, 12 other guys sit in quarantine for 2 weeks. And that's hard to calculate.
Is spring football realistic? Now, in the Pac-12, spring weather, winter weather, January, February, March, I mean, it'll be cold in Utah. It'll be wet in Seattle. But you're in a conference where January, February, March, you know, it's not Big 12, you guys. Could spring football work?
I think it's feasible if you do it really early. And for me, I've been calling it winter football. I don't know that we can play into April, May and truly be able to turn guys back around and get them back for a summer training session that leads to a fall start. Maybe something that could be January, February, and maybe ending in March. That would give us a lot of time, I think, to get their bodies back. And that's what I hear from a lot of the student athletes and their families about if that does happen, how soon can that be started and finished in order for their bodies to be able to come back?
You know, college football is interesting. You know, and I've said this, I've worked at companies that have great leadership and companies that don't have good leadership. And my career is largely a testament to I've been better every time I've had better leadership around me. One of my complaints about college football is the Pac-12 plays by, you know, you guys play tough out-of-conference games, and then the SEC plays one fewer. And then I look at it and I think, can't we have like a centralized voice in this sport? I mean, David, college football makes over $2 billion a year on television. Have you been or are you ever disappointed in what sometimes appears to be, you know, it's a balkanization. It's five conferences all working, doing their own thing instead of sort of a central unified voice?
Well, I don't want to sound like it's a cop-out because I know it sounds like a cop-out, but it's a complicated issue in that it depends on what specifically we're talking about, because some things I do believe we would love to have some unification. You and I have talked about this before, standardizing our the Power Five in particular and the high value independents as far as their scheduling makes a lot of sense to a lot of people, so that we can actually be judged to get into this 14 playoff, which should be eight. But that's a big thing. But as far as how things are managed, I think you'll have a bunch of commissioners that don't want to be told from some central office what to do with their universities. You'll have a lot of university presidents on one side of the country that say, don't give me the same rules as those schools on the other side of the country. So I think there needs to be some more centralization and some more decision making that's more uniform. But I think there's going to be a lot of things that the individual campuses and the commissioners and their conferences will fight against some levels of uniformity in some areas.
I always wonder, like the Stanford athlete, you probably have, you know, you got guys that are going to run companies. When you talked about not playing, what was the reaction on your campus from Stanford football players when you said, guys, we're not going to play? What was the reaction to that news?
Well, we've done a really good job between my staff, our operations personnel, communicating with our players that from the very beginning, and I'm fortunate, I've been on two different working groups, our Pac-12 and the NCAA working groups. We started with two questions. Can we play this game safely and should we play this game safely? So we've kept them in the loop that we're not making this decision, that our medical professionals are going to make this decision. And when this decision came down, the disappointment was obviously palpable, but our guys understood it. They understood that this was going to be hard from the very, very beginning. And when there are questions about their health and safety that we can't answer, that we try to mitigate as best we can, but we still can't find a way to truly feel great about getting it done, that we came to the only conclusion which we had, which was to postpone it until it's a time where we can do it safely.
You're not the AD, but you know the finances of the sport. I saw a story this morning. Iowa's going to lose $75 million. We know college football is the breadwinner in the family of college athletics. How do you believe, you guys cut, I think, 11 sports at Stanford. Do you believe college sports will look different from today forward for the rest of our lives?
I think in the short term, absolutely. It's one of the things I feel even more confident about, that we made the right decision, because we made the decision despite the potential difficulties financially for institutions as well as conferences. We made the right decision for our student athletes. We made the right decisions for our staffs, because as much as we talk about providing an environment for the student athletes, a high percentage of them are not in a dangerous position with this virus. Some of them are, and we have to really account for all of those that are. But our staffs, our coaches, the other people that are going to be around our team, our doctors, trainers, et cetera, this is a very, very difficult thing that we've proven as human beings that we can't completely stop around the globe. So I think we made the right decision despite how difficult this is going to be financially for all those affected.
Yeah. Are you guys still practicing? What's the protocol, David, right now?
Well, as you know, region by region, things are very different. We are able to train. We can't share equipment right now. We can get on the field and do a lot of things, but we can't get too close. We're still keeping our 6-foot social distancing. So there are other areas of the country that can do more than others. So we're adhering to our local protocols. But our guys are training. Our guys are doing well. And our guys, once again, shared an element of gratitude this week that we made a decision that we thought was best for them. And their help.
Good seeing you. I just told Joy here, it's actually, I've seen more of my daughter and my son than I ever have before. I know your family. It is kind of an interesting time in our lives. I mean, it's one of those things, I think I wake up in the morning fairly optimistic. I told my kids, I'm like, you're going to get more of dad for the next year, like it or not. Thank God I like my kids. But I mean, for you personally, how have you dealt with it?
It's been outstanding. You know, the life of a football coach, and the other day, I grabbed my keys and I was walking out the door, and my kids stopped me because they hadn't seen me do that in a while, and they got thrown off because they're used to me not being around. But for me being around pretty much for 5+ months, being there for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, going for walks, playing games, you know, when I have time, when I'm not doing Zooms, it's been great. It's been a great lift to our family. We all know there's a tipping point that sometimes there's too much family time, that we need a little break from each other. But at the same time, for football coaches, this is a time that we'll look back on, and with all the difficulties, I think we'll all agree that this was a great time to be with our families.
Good seeing you, Coach. David, I love having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Great to see you, man.
Good to see you. Good perspective on it. It's college football's the one joy. You and I, you're a Hurricane through and through, and I'm Pac-12 guy forever, and this is the sport I don't know what to get. I can guess a bunch of stuff. I also do think it's easier to do NASCAR than horse racing, golf, than it is the NFL. College is really complex, and you got the college kids. By the way, the college kids want to go to college, but the professors are 65 years old, and they're like, no, I don't want kids in my class.
There's so many elements to college football that don't even remotely apply to professional sports. It's completely different.
And even if it's college football and pro football has billionaire owners. They can write a check and just say tested.
All these kids are technically adults, right? But we refer to them as college kids.
Because
they're amateur athletes. It is upon us in some way to protect them, right?
Sure. If I'm not paying you.
That's always the conversation.
Yes. I'm not paying you and asking you for a physical health risk. It's very complicated. Yeah. People are trying to simplify college football and COVID. It's really a lot. College professors, a lot of them are 60. You know, they're tenured, 60, been there a while. They don't want to be around a bunch of college kids who are at Senior Froggy's last night knocking without a mask 12 beers down. They get COVID. They could have underlying health issues. You know, some of these college football coaches, 58 to 68 years old, a little weight on, underlying health issues. It's a very complex situation. All right, Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
We do a lot of camp video and picture evaluations around here.
Yeah, you know, very concerned about Joe Burrow's new arm last week. What else we got?
Well, Tom Brady's been criticized for losing arm strength over the past couple years.
Let me look at it.
But those in Tampa definitely disagree. Peter King spent some time at Bucks camp recently and said that he thought Brady's arm looked stronger than it did last year. He also spoke to Bruce Arians about people who think Brady's arm strength has declined, and he said those evaluators are not smart, and the guy can make every throw.
Let's look at this throw right here. Oh, a rocket.
Like, literally, that wasn't even a really strong throw. But Tom Brady also posted a little something talking about this as well. He wrote, pre and post TB12 method. There's been some pretty unflattering photos of Tom Brady over the years.
He looks ripped.
He does. He looks very different, actually.
Well, you know, you lived in Florida. I used to live in Tampa. You'll lose weight fast in Tampa.
You are not going to keep on your water weight.
No.
if you're out playing football in Tampa, in Florida, at any capacity during the summer months, yes.
I remember.
That's not going to stay on you.
There was a shot of Tom when he first got there. It was like June, and there was a practice photo, and his shirt was soaked, and I'm like, you can work your butt off in Boston weather. You never look like that.
No.
I mean, I covered the Bucks for 2 years. Going to practice, you'd soak your shirt.
But he also's never really been built like that. Like, he's always looked more like the first picture he posted in New England.
Yeah.
But he's talked about that. It's because he's focused more on pliability and lengthening his muscles and not putting on muscle. So maybe he changed his diet or his workout regimen now. Or it could just be that he is working out in Tampa. And it's
best Cuban sandwiches in America, Tampa. Oh, my God. Red beans and rice in Tampa.
You know Miami has, like, the best Cuban food.
Oh, my God. I actually went to a Cuban restaurant in Miami. Yeah. Cuban food is Cuban coffee.
Well, you got to be careful with Cuban coffee.
Because it tastes like.
That is concentrated.
It tastes like it's candy.
In college, you get the Cuban coffee in the little container and then pour it into smaller containers and kind of share it community-wise.
Cuban food is those sandwiches.
Excellent.
Oh, I could eat one every day.
Yes.
So good.
He's looking good, though, down there in Tampa. We'll see. So Alex Smith returned to Washington and was working towards a comeback after the terrible leg injury he suffered in 2018. And he has now been cleared for football activity by the team and activated off of the physically unable to perform list. The team will have its full practice with pads on Tuesday, so he will be there, cleared for football activity. His wife posted a video of the family spraying him with champagne with the caption, "Hard work pays off. Lots to celebrate in the Smith house tonight." Joe Theismann talked about Smith's recovery. He said he's gone through a lot more than I had to go through. No matter what happens, he's already won the award for comeback player of the year.
He's the nicest guy in the world, by the way.
You didn't watch the documentary, right?
I'm not going to watch the documentary.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't, because if you're shook about it before watching the documentary,
video kind of freaks me out. Even that video. I can love a guy, but now I think he should hang it up and just get out of the sport. You made a ton of money. You're a good dude. I love the rehab. I hope Dwayne Haskins is 15-1 and never misses a snap. I've never rooted harder for a young quarterback than Dwayne Haskins. I don't want to see Alex near a field.
I'm so torn about it because he's worked so hard.
Absolutely.
And I can't imagine, I mean, the physical pain of it alone, what he's had to endure, all of the surgeries that he's had. I think he's had like 17 surgeries or something.
Like this year.
On just that leg. Like when you talk about, like Schlereth has talked about how many surgeries he's had, that's like all over his body. We're talking about one specific injury he's had that many surgeries. I hope he gets an opportunity to go out there and has whatever level of success is going to satisfy him. He obviously loves football, but it is a little scary when you see what he's gone through. Finally, Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier met for a third time in the main event of UFC 252 Saturday. They put on a show, mostly going shot for shot in the early rounds. Cormier suffered a poke in the eye.
Yep.
So he poked Miocic first, and they stopped the fight. Then Cormier got poked in the eye, but the referee did not stop the fight. He said that he just told him like he got punched, and then they found the replay. He really, really got poked in the eye.
Yeah.
He said he couldn't see after that. He was able to rally and keep it close in the fourth round, but
let me tell you something. They both landed blows.
It was a great, great fight.
A great fight.
Despite the fact that he couldn't see, it was a lot up against the fence, but I really loved it. And, you know, I felt for Cormier because, you know, this could be his final fight. He said, "I'm not interested in fighting for anything but titles. I don't imagine there will be a title. So that will be it for me. I've had a long run. It's been great. A great, great saga of fights between the two of them, though, and a good time on Saturday night."
Good stuff. Again, UFC crushes it.
Yes.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live
Okay,
News.
I'm making my official NBA predictions next. None of this rambling on last week. I got all the games done. They start today. I'll give you my official predictions coming up next in Best for Last.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So nice to have you in. I slept great last night, and I've just been a little foggy today.
I slept horrible last night. Had an apocalypse dream.
You mean the world ends or something?
Yeah.
Oh, those aren't great.
It was actually, it was very weird because it was all about, like, us having to wear masks because we messed something up with the environment. So, like, the earth was unleashing this, like, gas on everybody.
I saw a story this weekend about a fire-nado.
Mm-hmm.
In California, they have fires, and if there was wind, you could have a tornado with fire. That's like
a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm not sure what else you could throw at me. They ran out of vodka, it's just the end is nigh. All right, here we go. Best for last. I'm officially filling out my playoff bracket.
Okay.
All right. First round. Lakers over the Blazers. I watched Portland this weekend. They're just shot. Melo's their best wing defender. LeBron's 52-10 in the first round. And you know what the Blazers don't do? Now, this may not be catastrophic. The Blazers do not defend the three. They don't defend anything. They don't defend the three. I do think the Blazers peel off some wins here. No Avery Bradley. Portland's backcourt's going to have a field day. I think it goes six, but I'll take the Lakers. I'm going to take OKC to beat Houston simply because the Thunder went 2-1 against them this year. Chris Paul leads the NBA in clutch points. And there's a little bit of Chris Paul wants to prove. I think Chris Paul elevates his teammates better than Harden does. I think Harden elevates Harden. And I think this is going to end up being a wildly entertaining series. If you've not seen Oklahoma City play this year, as you watch them, remember, many people thought it was a tank. And they were shockingly good at the end of the season. I'll take Denver over Utah. Denver's got a couple of starters hurt. But Utah's missing Bojan Bogdanovic, their second-leading scorer, and Utah just, they are hard-pressed to score points. Mike Conley's also out for them. I just think Utah's going to struggle to score. Clippers over the Mavs, that's a bad matchup for Dallas. Dallas is an atrocious defensive team. And when they played this year, it wasn't highly, it was Clippers won all three games, and a couple of them were blowouts, so that's an easy one. Let's go to the East. Bucks will beat the Magic. Giannis had a field day against them. And by the way, Jonathan Isaac, ACL injury, he's out. So Orlando loses size. That's a big problem. The Heat will beat the Pacers. They beat them in three of four games this year. T.J. Warren was really good, but you know who defended T.J. Warren really well this year? Jimmy Butler. I'll take Boston over Philadelphia. Boston lacks the essential size, but Ben Simmons is out. Embiid's not 100%. And I think the issue in this series is Boston knows what they are. They have limitations, but they know what they are. Philadelphia doesn't know what they are all these years in. And I take Toronto over the Nets. Nets, it's fascinating. They don't have Spencer Dinwiddie, Wilson Chandler, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Nets are like Phoenix. Congrats to you. Congrats to you for even being here. We go to the second round. I'll take the Lakers over the Thunder. They faced them four times. They won three. By the way, LeBron averaged nearly a triple-double. They don't have a lot of bodies to throw at LeBron here. I think Portland's going to be a harder out for the Lakers than OKC. I think OKC is going to be overmatched here. Also, when you're a young team and if you beat Houston, OKC could get really, really high and feel like, you know, they've done their job. I'm going to take the Clippers to beat Denver. Again, Denver's missing. He's got some injuries, and they have this year. So, you know, I think Denver's a good story in a year away. Michael Porter Jr. has been terrific. Jokic, if you don't watch him play, is the best passing big guy since Arvydas Sabonis. These European centers, for the record, they can all pass. The European game is a little finesse for some, but, God, all their bigs can pass the ball. So Lakers, Clippers, we'll end up in the Western Conference Finals. Then do we go to the Eastern Conference Finals? This gets a little easier, although Milwaukee's not playing terribly well right now. Bucks had the best net rating in the NBA, best defensive rating, and Giannis was a problem for Miami. But Miami gets hot on threes. Little upset alert here. Spoelstra's a gamer. Jimmy Butler's going to have his way. Miami's the kind of team that can shoot themselves in or out of game, so this is going to be fascinating. If Milwaukee can't get to the conference finals, the NBA could look a lot different this offseason. I'm going to take Toronto over the Celtics. I think Toronto's got some size. Boston, although they've won, and this will probably be as good a series as the Eastern Conference will have until the Eastern Conference finals. I'm going to take Toronto to upset Boston. Well coached. I think Nick Nurse is a wash with Brad Stevens. Then I'll take the Clippers to handle the Lakers. They've got four guys to throw at LeBron. I think they're a much better team. And I think the Lakers at this point, all their flaws will be noticeable. They can't defend the three. They don't hit it. They don't have a ton of depth. No Avery Bradley will be very noticeable in that series. I'll take the Bucks to beat the Raptors in a really tough series. And then I think the Clippers are going to roll over Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee's going to struggle. I think they're going to struggle against the Raptors. I think they'll struggle a little bit against Miami. And then the Clippers, look at that. Doesn't that look crazy? The L.A. Clippers will be – it doesn't even look right.
Crazy. I have it the exact same, except for I have Houston beating OKC, and I am with you on the Heat. I really wanted to pick my Heat over Milwaukee. I still went with Milwaukee.
They can shoot their way into it.
Very interested to see how Milwaukee is playing at that point.
It feels like Miami is sort of...
It'll be a long series either way.
Miami is actually young in terms of playing together. They haven't played that... They could have used an entire second half. You know, Jimmy Butler comes down, they're playing well. Okay, we take 4 months off. They go back into the bubble. Oh, they play well. It's like we say about the NFL. The preseason's going to hurt teams. Like the NBA bubble, Miami needed another 25 games to get it all together for chemistry. But they've made the best of it. And so they're starting right now. I guess we don't have a score. Denver's playing Utah right now. Utah's got Conley out, Bojan Bogdanovic out. So Denver leads 59-52. Nobody's paying attention to Denver because Mark Cuban's Mavs are young, and the story of OKC, they've been unbelievable. Denver, if Michael Porter Jr. is as good as he looked in the bubble, it's like, watch out. So they're going to have Gary Harris, Jokic, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter, Jokic, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, and I'm missing another one of their guys. Will Barton. That's like real players. That's like a real lineup. So good for them. Show us your do-it-yourself projects. Obviously, there's more time than ever, fellas, to do it yourself or ladies listening to the show. Go to Lowe's.com. I built my bar cart. It's officially finished. Life is good so far. Oh, want to thank David Shaw, Albert Breer, Kevin O'Connor, and Doug Gottlieb. So who plays tonight? Who do we got tonight, NBA? What? Oh, Clips Mavs tonight? I'm done with Philly. Yeah. So Mavs, Clippers. That's just not – Dallas is a lot of fun.
Nets, Raptors, Sixers, Celtics, Mavs, Clippers.
Mavs, Clippers. Yeah, bad matchup for Dallas, but I got to tell you, the play-in games were great.
Bubble's been amazing.
Saturday was sensational. I know there's a lot of negativity around this. The bubbles actually worked. We always thought the golf and the tennis and the UFC would be fun in NASCAR. Everybody gets that, horse racing. And then we said the team sports, bubbles, we wondered about players leaving the bubble. But I think everything's been kind of as predicted, and college football is a little unhinged. And as we've said for years, they don't have a CEO. It's going to look unhinged, and it does. We'll see you tomorrow.